So welcome to our session, and I am Matt Turner. I'm the CTO for Media and Entertainment at MarkWatcher. MarkWatcher is a database company. If you didn't get that, you might notice we like to talk about data, and that's why, because we're a database company. Today, we're going to talk about smart content. So we were involved very early in the concept of smart content, and right from the start, this is the idea that all the data around the asset makes up this whole ecosystem. This is actually a slide from the 2014 first Smart Content Summit. Mary, who's in the room, Go Smart Content, the guy, came up with the concept of all this content that goes, all the data that goes around the content, and how it takes you from inception all the way to not just archive or delivery, but infinity, because you don't know what's coming next. So the smart content idea is something that we've been working with a lot. And our start, our project start, was around creating, helping the distribution systems, so the supply chain, getting the metadata out into the storefronts, that valuable part of the equation, and also creating great experiences. We were lucky enough to be involved with the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary app, which is just now the Saturday Night Live app that is undergoing another renaissance thanks to the current political environment. And that kind of smart content, bringing these really great experiences with this data that's really rich with content, is where we got involved. But those authors really talked about the value at the end consumer. And what we're going to talk about today is how smart content is evolving to some of the rest of that area. Specifically, we're going to give you guys an update on two really important areas. One of them is getting to the source. So as database people, we always like to get the best possible source of data because that gives you the most flexibility later on. And in this industry, that means tackling production data. So we're going to talk a little bit about data in production, some of the pioneering work that we've been lucky enough to be involved with in that area. And then, as we look at the data that is coming in, and it's the diversity of it, not just in the new sources, but the diversity of the tools that are available to generate data, we're going to talk about preparing for the future. And that future is being flexible in terms of which kinds of data processes you're going to be able to take advantage of, and also maintaining, at the core of the platform, the data itself. So, without any more delay or introduction, I'm going to introduce my fellow pioneers in smart content who are going to come up and help conclude this conversation. So please join me in welcoming Anthony Cargo. Anthony is... So, everybody says not that you can try to pronounce it.
I tell you not even try.
Yeah, I know, everybody says not to, but I'm persistent, and I will someday get Prayanan right. Not right?
Close. It's actually very close.
Alright, okay. Okay, so, guys, we're here, as I mentioned, with a lot to talk about. And so much that I even wrote a whole script, so we're going to stay on target. But I want to get started just with you guys introducing yourselves. Not everybody obviously knows everybody here, so I want you guys to introduce yourselves, a little bit about what your organization's up to, and what you're doing with smart content, and since we're going this way, Anthony, go ahead.
Hi, so I'm the Director of Research and Development for Disney and ABC Television Group, which is the ABC Network, Disney Channels, and Freeform. We work on things as diverse as TV animation production technology, VR and AR. We started metadata about 3 years ago when we were trying to move into digital platform disruption and identifying places that the rest of our organization was inadequately investing. And so we've got a metadata taxonomy team that is 2 years into a project that we're going to talk about. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Anthony. Okay, Andrew.
Hey, so it's you, Papayan. That's okay. I hope we've all reached it. It's a Finnish name. Actually, the saddest joke is that is John Smith in Finnish. But anyway, so I'm helping about regional technology innovation lead for a company called Avanade. So I see a couple of our customers here, but for those of you who don't know, Avanade is a joint venture between Accenture and Microsoft, and essentially what we do is take great technologies, whether it's Microsoft Word or, for example, MarkLogic, and help our customers put it into production, not just the technical part, but also the cultural organizational part of it. And so, you know, what do I do and why I'm here? My job is to help our customers push the envelope, get to the next level in their respective industries, and, you know, of course, in the entertainment space, you know, dealing with your, whether you want to call it metadata or just data, or, you know, everybody has a different name for it, but figuring out what to do with that and how to make better use of it is a big deal, a big part of my work. And that's also, you know, we've been working on some of the cases I think we'll be
right, awesome. So thanks, guys. So as I mentioned, we have a lot to get through. We want to talk about some work, moving upstream, getting to the sources, and then think about the future. And to get there, I'm going to take us in the Wayback Machine for a second, to last year, in fact, in this exact same room, where we had this conversation about a project that really was one of the first to tackle metadata in production. And you know, like I said, we've really been focused on the impact of data in distribution. And so we had this opportunity to work with something that worked with the EDC, so Eric Weaver and the EDC, and Anthony got involved with, called the Suitcase. So I'd say, Anthony, since you were principally involved in this, can you talk a little bit about the Suitcase project? What were their goals? And how did it, well, the goals as it pertained to data. And well, we'll start with that. So what was the Suitcase project, and what were the goals as it pertains to data?
I think two similar and related goals. One is looking at the production from the very beginning and seeing if we could identify an authority source for metadata and then track that metadata as efficiently as possible from production to distribution point. That was one goal. Another goal was, could we use semantics and graph data to create a really elegant consumer experience using the metadata in a scene-based way to enhance the digital platform experience.
So with this project, and I wanted to set the stage for people, that it was, so there were some other goals, one of them which was cloud. And this was, we're going back to the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, where it wasn't necessarily commonplace to use cloud tools, but that was a real opportunity to look at linking together data that was generated but had a common form, but had a common location, which was cloud. So I wanted to just set that scene a little bit, which is, it's a film, The Suitcase, which was founded by the ETC as a, it's a real film. By the way, do you want to give an update on how the film is doing?
Oh, it's doing fantastic. It was also used by our writer and director as her senior thesis, and you know, she was equipped with the best tool set of any senior for this project. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of donations, things like that. So it was a lot better than most senior PCs. And it went to Tribeca, it won a BAFTA award, it's been screened at CAA, UTA, and I think it's going to Palm Springs Festival soon. So it ended up being a bigger success in the content area than even in the metadata area.
Well, it did succeed some things in the metadata area. So this film, while they were filming it, the data that was generated was tracked in cloud with something called C4, and that's taking another piece of the production pipeline, which is kind of the breadcrumbs or the Rosetta Stone for the data. And then the project that we got involved in, Anthony helped us work on, was taking those breadcrumbs, stitching together the data, and actually coming up with a real descriptive data set generated from the tools that were used in the production. And I'm sort of going back and slowing that down a little bit, because many of you know this, but some people may not know that things like the cast list and the scene list and anything that you might see later in the actual distribution, much of that data, or maybe all of it, is rekeyed. So even the actual list of the cast members about who played what part is actually not data that was generated and was used in the actual production environment to put people on the set. And so this film, for the very first time, actually had a lineage of that cast data going into a database and then being, as we talked about, used. So, Anthony, that was, there's a lot going on with that. If you recall back to some of the things that we learned in that process, can you talk a little bit about that data journey for the Suitcase and some of the things we learned in terms of actually taking that data, not rekeying it, and trying to use it later?
I'm thinking of Khaki, seven things.
Can you remember all seven?
There were seven things, and I don't
know.
I remember one of them, which is that you identify the proper source, because there are sometimes, and maybe this is two, sometimes it is easier to rekey or to regenerate metadata than to try and track it through the process. So there are some things that you can go to the call sheets and the production documents and the early cuts to get. If you're trying to find out what made it into the final version, you shouldn't go to the dailies to find that out, right? Because you're not going to get that data. So that was one of the most obvious takeaways, is that you can't get everything from upstream, but there are some things where if you can identify the authority and make contact with them, then it does save you a lot of time.
Yeah, and that key, that's kind of, I mean, the seven lists, there were a couple other really good findings about identifying sources. One of them was, don't do the data pull until after production is finished. Because you continually are facing changes in the environment of the raw data. That's another good one. So before we get into some of those lessons learned that are in the list, we actually did, and this is, that screenshot does not capture the film still that's behind it. So if you have really good eyes, you can see a guy with a gun, because this film is about, it's a really great story, it's about the baggage handler during the events of 9/11, who actually discovers critical information in a bag, and his journey to get that information to the authorities involves getting arrested on the tarmac. So we did create an application. We actually got this application up in our booth, and the application is using that descriptive metadata to, when you pause the film, take you through a journey of things like the characters. And if you were to click on a character, you would see character information. The locations, and locations are very interesting because it's linked from the storylines of the film to the actual production data. So you know that it was supposed to be Logan Airport, but we also know that it was actually shot in San Bernardino. And that's a very important link for something we're about to get into with this next round. And then storylines. And you want to talk a little bit about storylines and sort of, that's maybe some foreshadowing about the kind of information you want to put into a film.
Yeah, I mean, all this data was generated through our tagging tool, but the authorities came from the production. And so, you know, things like the characters, the authority list, the list of the characters in the scene, which were fed into our temporal tagging platform, and then generated the time index, things are the scene indexes. So the things that are more descriptive and more rich about the content are things that you can't use automation for, like what are the storylines in this series. And so there are a lot of use cases for this. So if I want to catch up on a season of Scandal and I've only got 20 minutes, you could create tools to automate that process to say, you know, I've got 20 minutes, I want to catch up on season 4, and knowing where the storylines are and what scenes are associated with the storylines lets you put together these experiences without having to pay people to sit down in an edit booth and, you know, edit together a catch-up just for you. So it allows you to personalize, and that's one of the biggest goals of, you know, why we invest in everything.
Okay, so some of the lessons learned were that it's hard to get this data through. Some of the benefits were that you can start to really prove out some of these concepts. And as I mentioned, the timing on this, we were actually again a year ago, but I wanted to bring it back up, largely because it's a good foundation. So we sort of foreshadowed into some descriptive things. I'm going to shift gears and talk about, you could go and now talk about sort of the next phase. And if some of you were in the room where Joel Sloss was talking about a project, the next Blockbuster talk, that actually is the same project that we're going to talk about, where from the work in the suitcase, we took an unexpected turn. So, we just talked about great user experiences and storylines. Yuka, can you talk about the project that we did with New Regency and some of the goals and why, how it got started and some of the goals?
Sure. As you saw probably in that session, we were talking not so much on the front end or the distribution side of things. We're talking much more about the production side. You know, how do you track things through production? How do you make sure that people don't get access to things that they shouldn't have access to? And also we're talking a little bit about residuals. So from New Regency's perspective, this was much more about their internal efficiencies. And one of the big stories that we always came back to is this is their wheel has to be straight. It's when you have a person showing up at your door 2 years after the movie's released, saying, I was in that scene, I need to get my residuals. The solution today is you bring a room full of lawyers with stopwatches in their hands watching the movie or the final cut, whatever. And that's pretty expensive stuff, especially when you start considering, you know, we all know there is no one movie. There's a domestic release, there's probably a couple of dozen different international releases, there's a DVD, well actually a whole bunch of DVDs, different TV releases and so forth. So managing and collecting all of that data becomes pretty expensive. On the flip side, actually, very similar data, very similar process. You're also tracking usually product placement. So instead of just paying money off, you also have money coming in if you can track how different products were properly received. So that was a big part. And the flip side of that, you know, we're talking a little bit about security from the sense of NDA and somebody in their rules who put in pictures out that they shouldn't. But New Regency started really thinking about it, and they realized that in their current way of dealing with data, they were actually exposing a lot of things to people who probably shouldn't have it. So let's say they can have a random startup, let's say write a price of contract, and you know how big these contracts can be, you know, they specify everything from how many M&Ms are in for when it shows up to his social security information and you know, whatever financial details. If you're a production assistant, and your job is to help write, you know, secure the travel and make sure that everything is up to the standards, you need that part of the contract. You don't need the whole contract. And they started figuring out, how do we actually also, in addition to talking about the production data and our internal processes, how do we make sure that people have access to what they need and only what they need?
So this was an interesting, I mentioned, turn of events, because we had a descriptive, we had production data generating descriptive metadata to give somebody an experience to, you know, you have a richer data richer data experience with the film. And Lulu Zales, who many of you know, who's at New Regency, looked at that demo and said, I have a process finance problem that I'm going to solve with it. And I think that's just great, because you'll notice that I've been very deliberately talking about data. And I think I'm not even going to say the metadata word anymore. Because that's really what's happening, is that the data that you can bring together has a lot of different value. So I want to go back to something you talked about with the processes on in production. Because we talked about the downstream effect of leaking data. That is, somebody, I've heard this quote, that you know, data that you see out on by the end time it's delivered, it's been rekeyed 30 times. And when I say that, and see nobody's challenging me because it seems completely real if you really know the process. That's one kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit more about what you just said about the contract and the sharing environment? In particular, Lulu was really talking about email. So maybe talk a little bit about the workflows that exist around data without this kind of solution.
So part of the problem, you know, we all work in the industry and we know how. Part of the problem is we send emails, and data and emails stale really fast. So if I send an email, let's say today to Matt, talking about some production specifics, where things are, locations, and whatnot, those details are probably going to change by tomorrow or the day after before we actually start shooting. But actually, to be very frank, I'm not sure exactly which little bullet you're now referring to. She has a lot of it.
Well, not so much the quote. The notion is that the two things about the environment. It's a diverse and heterogeneous workplace where you don't have people in any kind of corporate system. So not everybody's on the same email system. And it's a place where somebody talked about what you just talked about with access to information. People have appropriate access, but they take inappropriate action, like taking a contract out and putting it in email and sharing that around. So that workflow, largely the data workflow that exists in the set environment, is ad hoc email. But at least it's email now instead of sharing files. So I was just going around and some of the impacts of that kind of workflow.
Yeah, and actually to make it worse, not pointing fingers, I'm not sure a lot of people know this, some of the studios are still not even in the email phase. Some of them actually still hand binders or papers off to the production execs on a daily basis, which it's a different way of running a business.
If you like that sort of thing. So we had this entry point to think about a project and think about a different way of handling some data.
So I'm going to reach over to the handy slides.
And ask you to talk a little bit about this solution and the components of it and some of the impact that it had.
Yeah, so we had a pilot program with the New Regency, and then we had a number of different applications around the whole process. So we're thinking from the process and data perspective first. But on the technical side, sort of the data side, we figured that what we really need is a data hub that can collect and coordinate the data between all the different applications. So if you're a little more traditional IT guy, like you've been around like me, you know, it's not just a data warehouse, it's also an active hub that pushes information out to the other systems. So for example, when you start a project, then you probably, at least in the way we're thinking, you probably register it in EIDR first. You know, your files can change, so eventually things need to get updated both ways. And then we go into the contracting phase and then scripts and into the actual, you know, breaking down the scenes, talk about the props and shoot the film, get to the dailies, and then of course on the latter end, get to the actual edits. And we wanted to collect and then coordinate the data between all these systems. And we had a spreadsheet about, I want to say from dashboard to about where Matt is sitting, with all the different data flows and you know, which system is the master for the data, which part, and how things are expected to change. So we actually did a very detailed work how things go. And, you know, by and large, answering your question about how did the pilot also go, is I would say we're successful in proving out that this can be done. We only did parts of it. We didn't actually map all the hundreds or probably a couple thousand of data fields. So we only did some aspects of that, but we did touch all these systems. And we're able to prove that, that this is possible with the technology that we have. We also learned, kind of what you were alluding to earlier, is part of the problem is in the organization, because you have a lot of different companies on the set, and the motivation for them to use your system instead of doing what they've always been doing in their own Excel files or whatever they may have. That's also part of the conversation you need to have when you start engaging in something like this.
So the entry point for this project was someone looking at the descriptive system and saying, I can solve a finance problem. I need to automate my reporting. So can you just, that last little mile of it, that is something we did prove out with actual reports coming out of data versus somebody, a group of lawyers.
Yeah, there is both. And what we were actually partially contradicting what I think Anthony said, partially not. What we were doing in this environment is we were actually able to collect the data on the casting participation, through the scenes, through the cuts, so that we could automatically report on who was participating in which scene, for how long, so that we could drive the different procedural calculations and product placement calculations based on the available data. So but that requires that we can actually mirror the scenes data or the dailies data with the cutting data and the question, you know, not all the tools support that yet. So that may be the missing link.
Yeah, and I think so. What's our point, Jen?
Yeah, my understanding also is that it's one movie with one company, and ABC probably has 40 production companies and all of the post houses, and everybody wants to use their own tools, and then we have three other networks, and then another network, and nobody wants to do anything the same, and so the idea of dictating in an authoritative fashion something like this, I think it's a great idea. We should dictate it, but there's been a little appetite to do so.
So so it's actually, you know, so don't be down. No, but actually, that's where we did want to leave this. And when we talk about this whole journey in production, what we're looking at are proof points and reality of solving problems. And then we're also being very conscious of where we are today. And one of the pieces that we're intending, that this did intend to prove out, was around flexibility. It's a hub that potentially could go in any environment. But I think, I don't know whether you want to disagree, but I think the current state of this is, yes, we've done some experiments with production. We absolutely know there's value, but maybe you can leave us with where do you think the current state is? Because we know it's not going to scale to Disney right now.
Well, it hasn't been made to scale to Disney yet. And where I'm going with that, and this is also part of the conclusion in my next section, is it's part of it is a technical problem. So part of this is, if we had complete control over all the source systems, we could have done this 10, 20 years ago. It's not. So part of the tools for building that flexible interface with different systems is it's getting to be, mainstream now. It hasn't been there for a long time, and that's where MarkLogic comes in at that flexibility, but also a large part of the problem, exactly like Anthony was saying, is this partially the business process side, like how do we actually do this, who's involved, what are their motivations, but most of all, it's an organizational and cultural problem, like how do we make sure that we motivate our people to jump in and join into this, and that's actually, and I'll talk more about that in the next section, but that's actually the one overarching theme that I'm hearing when I'm talking with different studios about this, is, it would be great, but. And then usually the bot is, it's silos or doesn't support my networks or whatever it may be, but something around, much more around the culture than technology.
So, right, and that's actually a great outcome for these experiments because we want people to raise the next problem. There's no doubt, though, that these experiments to use production data are going to bear fruit. We just don't know when it is. One of the other ones is just ownership. But that's where we're going to leave this because that's where it is. And we're going to jump a little bit into something, the future, if you will, and preparing for the future of data where maybe there will be feeds from production. Maybe there will be feeds from other systems that are interpreting your film. Maybe there will be lots of manual feeds. And come back to actually some of the fundamental questions we started with, which is, what kinds of data should we be thinking about in the future? And what are we planning to be planning for this. And since it's our last mini segment, in case you're following along, so we're right there. And this segment is, Anthony was talking a lot about something that you had a little bit more time on in smart contract, like your platform. But before we wanted to get into that, we wanted to talk a little bit about different kinds of data. So we've been talking about pilot data. We wanted to talk about the different kinds of data that are out there and where to focus. Title data versus
the whole. Oh, right, okay.
That's a hypnosis prompt I put in there.
So there are two types of data, right? That we're focused on. One is the title data, which has a totally different process and authority structure and resources and systems. And the scene level metadata. And the title level metadata is an input for the scene level metadata. But there's whole other systems that you need to generate the scene level metadata, and it's a totally different problem. It's actually a lot easier to generate the scene level metadata because it's just a technology problem. The tough stuff is the title level metadata, and that is the stuff that you need to get from upstream, you need authorized librarians, organizations, semantics, URIs, all that stuff.
Okay, so we're tight on time, so I want to jump right into some of the work you've been doing around scene level data. And talk about Project Eno. So that's your opening slide. Do you want to skip that? Maybe the use cases?
Yeah.
All right.
So the reason we built the platform that we're building is to improve operations, make things more efficient. You see our example. It's a live example that's in our video search product right now. And then that's the easy one, the one that actually is the hook to get people using the metadata. Once you have that hook, you can start personalizing digital platforms, and you can start using data science and decision science to drive better decision making, things like the pilot process, or you know, how many relationships threads do you have in Quantico? Those sorts of questions are the ones that we're answering in the data. And so we should probably jump to my architecture slide, because I think out here, but this is what we put together, and this is very oversimplified, so my architect would sort of migrate when he saw this, but the ontology at the top is really the governing logic for how content is put together. It's called a creative works model. It describes the fact that there are episodes as part of a series, which have acts and scenes and sub-scenes, which have characters and storylines and relationships. Something that's actually connection in ontologies. You need an ontology to govern the way that you associate information with a time code of a video versus the way that you just understand how an episode is structured. So it's a collection of ontologies that sort of underlies everything. And then that upstream data collection, the way that we're doing is we're starting downstream and going step by step upstream. So we're getting our storylines now from the creative development teams who get the dailies from the production from the writers. We're not going into the production to get this stuff. And that's a lot easier because I can give them a video search application that I build with their data, and that incentivizes them to work with us. So that stuff goes into our taxonomy application, which is really just an application that holds labels. So here's a bunch of names, here's a bunch of titles, here's a bunch of taxonomies about objects or locations. It doesn't actually make associations between those things. And then those labels go into our temporal tagging platform, media annotation platform, the three is for triples. That actually has a workflow engine. It ingests taxonomies from our taxonomy system. It spins up jobs, so it says, Matt over here, divide the episode into scenes, and Dave over here, once those are QA, then identify character appearances, and then once the characters are identified, associate traits or actions with them. All that time-indexed metadata then flows in semantic form, so RDF, into our logic, which is our metadata repository, which is the hub. And so that's not the only way the metadata gets in there, but that's one of the ways. That hub is essentially a giant graph. It's a big brain of all of our metadata about our content. And that is the platform that feeds n number of applications, whether it's a data science team that wants to pull some scene data, whether it's a video search application, whether it's a recommendation engine, all that stuff flows into there.
So we're right on time. I did want to ask you about the role of AI automation. You mentioned giving me a job to do it, and people are involved right now. So just maybe quickly, can you give us some of your thoughts on that balance between the people and what's coming with automation? And I think Guy, we're going to quit, but we'll be 30 seconds. I count.
Guy's okay.
So this is really important stuff.
Yeah, so automation is very important. It helps drive down the cost. And it, you know, if you can get a machine to tell you who the people in your episode are and what the objects and the actions are, you should use that. Automation will never be able to do all the things that we want to do. Automation can't generate storylines, right? So there's a limit to what it can do. The fact that we've built a manual platform allows us to actually assign some of those jobs to machines instead of to people. And then the results of those jobs can go into our human QA platform. So if we require 100% accuracy on characters, then we need a human to look at the results and say yes or no, which is a lot more efficient than having the humans do the tagging in the first place. So at its maturity, this will be still a hybrid system of computer vision, AI, machine learning, and human QA. And there are things that machines will never be able to do.
So when we set out to put the session together, we wanted to take a look at getting into production, some of that activity, getting to the source data, but I really just want to underscore the importance of what Anthony is laying out, which is this need for flexibility in planning for the future. Because there isn't going to be a single answer, including a single answer where you get the best source of data, and a single answer about how to best process it. We are absolutely out of time. I'm sure you guys have questions, but I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop.
Well,
we have a second.
Right. No, look, you're just going to the next session. I mean, the idea is also the other rooms are already broken and are getting ready to begin. So I would just say, if you're interested in joining another room, you should probably get up and do that now, so you're not watching me go to room already in session. But you want to do a little Q&A? Absolutely.
Well, here's a good question.
It's Yuka's room.
Here's a good question. All right, there's one good question.
I hope it's quick. All
right.
But I would assume that data stewardship is more and more important the more you're trying to squeeze the single
person. Well, you can use technology to make it more efficient, but you can, instead of having a human authorize every single thing that comes in, you can send candidate terms into a queue and have a mediation process instead of having that entirely, you know, managed by one team. Going upstream to sources of authority is also an easy way to avoid data stewardship cost, because if I go to the person who schedules the show for my air date, when they type in the date that the show is being scheduled and I pull that data right up from them, there's no other person that I go to check with to make sure that that's the right information. So that eliminates an entire workflow of making sure that we have the right air data by checking the press releases and going online and doing all that stuff.
I was more thinking of cases where data is redundant, so we have a
data. So, and that's part of what I'll be talking about. So the data will be redundant, and you have to deal with the process of dealing with that. So some automation may help, and you know, computing technology is advancing so fast, we may get some help 2 years, 5 years down the road. But right now, you have to plan for the fact that you will, and not just for the content part, but you actually have to intentionally plan for different values for the same attribute. And you know, maybe pilot a single one, if that doesn't matter. But for example, a description of a movie, or scene or episode, whatever, will be different for different needs, whether you're looking at internal or external or distribution or for marketing or whatnot. So it's part of the process or part of the capability you need to build in. That goes back to the flexibility topic.
Okay, I think we're gonna do the pause even though you're continuing. So thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you, Yuka. And